Welcome to Activate Yourself with Geeta Sidhu-Rab, where we feature otherwise normal people who, because of events in their life, have turned left and done unusual, inspiring, incredible things, like build a business, become a happiness expert, marry a prince, create an empire, or like your host, set up a health and wellness business, Nosh Detox. Here's your host, Geeta Sidhu-Rab.
This is Activate Yourself. My name is Geeta Sidhu-Rab, and today we're going to be talking to a really, really close friend of mine. And one of the reasons that got me to reach out to her, other than she's deeply entertaining and really bright, and I have fun when I hang out with her because, you know, it's my show, and if I want to. But it's also the fact that, you know, she brought out a report recently where she was talking about, Harriet was talking about what it's like to be a woman at work, what it's like to be a woman that is subject to levels of either oppression or suppression in a way that we refuse to acknowledge. And I admire her bravery and her tenacity in talking about this again and again and again. And when I tell you Harriet has been talking about this stuff for absolute bloody years, you will not be surprised when you hear the kind of stuff that she is going to talk about in our interview today. And one of the things that's really important about this is that I think my commitment to 2025 is to finally create a space where we can talk about the fact that women are just 50% of the world. We're 50% of everything. We are 50% of the power. We're 50% of the change. We're 50% of the transformation. We're 50% of the corporations of everything. And the fact that this isn't widely accepted and acknowledged is friggin' insane. It's just insane. And Harriet's going to tell us why we actually live in a world where this isn't just normalized. Like, we normalize two legs. Why do we not just normalize the fact that women have power? Well, you have to really consciously unnormalize it. That's really the reason that it isn't there. So please welcome my dear friend, Harriet Whaley-Cohen. Hi, Harriet. Thank you so much for joining me.
Geeta, it's such an absolute delight to be here. And I absolutely count you as one of my dear friends and sparring partners and inspirational women in my life. And when I think about the people in my life who are genuinely changing the world and making things better for women, a lot of people talk the talk, but there's not that many people who actually walk the walk. And you are one of those people. We are there walking side by side, cheering each other along. And yeah.
I agree. I think it says we do ambition bonding very well, which I always call as the opposite of oh no, it was so terrible. We can come and go, oh,
victim
my God,
stories.
How amazing this is. And I always say victim bonding is the one thing women tend to connect on. And I really dislike it. Let's ambition bond. You know, and I'm a big, big fan of that. And that's something that I can always count on with you. And, you know, it's not always a given that as successful women, there are other successful women that will be happy for your success. It's just not a thing. So what the thing I wanted to start our conversation with today, what made me reach out to you and say, come on the podcast as a guest, was that you created this D&I report that talked about a huge variety of things. But the thing I found really interesting is that you said that you are willing, committed, and prepared to talk about the things that no one else will ever talk about in the D&I space.
Yes. So this report was a piece of research that I did collaboratively with a male colleague of mine, Danielle Fiendarker of Token Man Consulting. And it's into the sexualization of women in the workplace. And all the work that I do is around helping companies in male-dominated industries, big companies, to have a completely different kind of conversation about gender balance and about D&I, diversity, equity, and inclusion, right? To actually get a genuine ROI on their gender balance initiatives, like to actually change things. Let's not pink wash. Let's not do pink cupcakes. Let's not just bring in one inspiring speaker. Let's not just put on a little confidence program for the women because the women are the problem and we must fix the women. You know, I was about to swear. Let's not do that. Let's look at, it's so degrading and it's so gaslighting for women of what the problems truly are. And I've been one of the only people, if perhaps the only person in the corporate space, in the diversity and inclusion space for a long time, who's been willing to bring up the topic of pornography and the sexualization of women, and looking at it from this big picture perspective of like what's going on out there in the world. And, you know, people don't leave behind that stuff when they come to the workplace. Pornography, we know from research that 90% of pornography, and there was some French, bit of French research that was done, a big piece of research recently that showed that 90% of pornography is degrading, objectifying, uses misogynistic language, is violent towards women. And we also know...
And that's something that we've accepted. That's a given. You expect... Well,
this is what the vast majority of men... men who are the main consumers. They're not the only consumers. And we know it's not all men, but the men that are watching pornography, this is what they're getting off to. And something happens when you watch a lot of this kind of thing is that you form an erotic blueprint, which means this is what you get off on. And you can't undo someone's erotic blueprint. They've had to stop doing research on the effects of violent pornography on people because they can't undo it. Once you started watching this stuff, you can never not find it a turn on, right?
Basically, and pornography is
consumed,
and you get to a place, and then that's the place which turns you on.
Yes. Right. So once you are excited and turned on by women being degraded and objectified, and violence being done to them in a sexual way, in a sexual context, that's what you find attractive. Now, more pornography is consumed globally per month than the whole of Netflix, Amazon Prime, all sports. By miles, right? This is the number one thing that is consumed in the world. And then you look at the prevalence and the popularity of Andrew Tate, of perhaps in a more sanitized way, Jordan Peterson, Matt Walsh, some of the huge male influencers who are pushing a deeply patriarchal, gender stereotyped, demeaning view of women's role and how men should behave. And then you translate all of that and say, well, if that's what's going on out there in the world, and then you look at what's going on in the corporate space and say, well, of course, there may be an issue with women being sexualized in the workplace. How is this affecting women's careers? How is, you know, allyship is the big buzzword at the moment.
What does that mean, Harriet? I don't know what allyship means.
Allyship means to be on the same side as actively.
And what does that mean in a corporate setting?
In a corporate setting, to be an ally means that you will champion someone, you will help give opportunities to them, you will help amplify and give them a voice, you will speak up for them, you'll help give them opportunities. It's not quite the same as being a sponsor or being a mentor. It's sort of part of who you are. It's seeped into every single thing that you do. It's about...
And in a corporate setting, you're basically saying in a corporate setting that what we want is that there's allyship by men towards women. Yes.
Well, we want allyship from everyone towards everyone else.
Yeah.
But we do need men, particularly white, middle-aged, middle-class men who have the majority of the power in the corporate world. And that's, I'm not making that up. You know, you can look at all the data.
Oh, no, obviously.
That's how it is, right? Let's be real now. We need the people with the power, which is a word I prefer than privilege, because I don't like the oppressor-victim narrative. I think that's deeply unhelpful. We need them to be allies, but we also need them to be allies to each other so that when they call things out, they're not seen to be breaking the bro code. And you know, because that's very frightening for a man to be cast out by his own safe group. But yeah, we also need women and every other group, you know, because there's a lot of talk around of allyship in the race sphere, in the mental health sphere. It's not just about between men and women, but we need everyone to be allies to everyone else so that when men try, because of course, when you're at the beginning of your allyship journey, if you don't really know what you're doing, but your intention is good, you will get it wrong. But if you fear you're going to be cancelled, and if you fear that so the allyship is an always directional thing in order to be successful.
Okay, so what we're saying, one of the things that has just sort of clocked in my brain is that you're saying that there's all of this porn being consumed as standard, right? Because it's so widely now accepted, let alone what that's doing to our younger men, but that's another story. And then you're seeing all that, and then you're coming to work and you're interacting with a woman. And actually, how can you not put that to one side? Because from my cues,
exactly, that would be
around racism, you know, like when we were young, and I remember us growing up with a massive level of racism that existed against Indians in Africa. And we went to South Africa, and you have to go through the door marked blacks, and people would talk about black people and all these, and I mean me included, obviously, in that, and all these tropes about how our brains didn't work and this and this and this. How were you then supposed to take us seriously at work?
Exactly.
So
it's very similar.
The same here, that if you're watching porn that degrades and says that women like to be controlled and hurting women is
and that this is how real men behave. This is it's part of the, you know, real men don't cry. It's part of the
it's creating a blueprint for a man that means misogyny is part of his makeup.
Yes, that men should be studs, that they should be, that they're naturally dominant leaders, that they are always in control, that, you know, and all of this stuff feeds into so many problems. So Danielle and I did this piece of research into the extent of the sexualization of women in the workplace to actually say, well, I suspect, I've long suspected, and, you know, having spent 10 years in investments, you know, before I had my children, I've seen it and experienced it firsthand. But that was quite a long time ago. And I really wanted to know, you know, what's actually going on here. And it's impossible to sum it up without using a very clickbaity phrase such as, and the results will shock you. Right? They may not surprise you. But you know, 79% of women have had to change their behavior in the workplace as a result of being sexualized.
What does that mean?
What, changing their behavior or being sexualized?
Both.
It's adapting what you wear. It's adapting what you say. It's adapting which spaces you put yourself into. It's adapting who you give your number to, which projects you decide to be on, which promotions you go for. It's just
That's
adapting
so terrible.
Everything.
That's like saying you got raped because you were wearing a short skirt.
Yes. And 55% of women say that, or 55% of respondents, apologies, because we did, it was, I think it was about 89% of the respondents were women, so we did have some men who answered the survey, say that they've been sexualized in their current workplace. And 40% of respondents said that there is somebody in their office who everyone knows is inappropriate or even handsy, physically inappropriate, but it's tolerated. Right. But here's the kicker, right? 50% of women, 50%, half of women have said that they have either left a job or thought very seriously about leaving a job because of being sexualized in the workplace. So when companies are thinking about gender balance and why women are leaving, why women aren't progressing, if they're not looking at this issue, they are absolutely just not looking in the dark corners
and
asking the right questions.
And missing the point. And the investment that's gone into putting these women. Yeah. This is the whole Crispin Odie story. And that story literally changed my life this year and changed everything I'm going to do next year. Because they had a phrase in there where they said something, I don't remember exactly, but they said, when the new receptionist started, the old one said, when he comes down the stairs, go and hide in that supply closet because you're going to feel safer if he just doesn't see you when he goes past. I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. What do you mean?
Exactly. It's like people who would say to young starlets, don't be alone with Harvey Weinstein.
Yes. Like
everyone knows, and we've seen it with the research that came out about female surgeons in the NHS. We've seen it in the Met. We've seen it in the fire service. We see it every single industry, is having its moment. It's not a single company issue. It's not a single industry issue. It's a patriarchal issue. It's a societal issue. And it is massively holding back women's careers and success and power.
We're going to go for a short break. When we come back, what I want to talk about, please, is what you think needs to happen about this, okay?
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
So we're back. What do we do?
Gosh, where do we start?
Well, anyway,
one of the big things,
that's a commitment you're going to make.
Yes, 100%. We have to be able to talk about it. We need more women in senior positions, because when you think about locker room banter, if at least half of the people in the locker room are women, it changes the climate. But we also have to have effective grievance procedures and accountability where people are taken really seriously.
Yeah,
when they
your boss to HR when HR is paid by your boss.
So there has to be a valuable thing. Exactly. So you have to create a climate where it's appropriate to do that. But one of the things that I think is the most important thing is that men have to call each other out and call each other in. I love the expression calling people in to change rather than just telling people off. I think that that's far more empowering and productive and gets us somewhere better. But we need men to do it when there are no women around. We need them to do it, you know, on their matey WhatsApp groups. We need them to do it, you know, in the bar after work or in the bathroom at work. When someone makes a comment like, oh, have you seen the new whoever, or have you seen what so-and-so is wearing today? Or, you know, we need this to happen when women aren't even there. And we need to make the consumption of, you know, this kind of violent pornography toxic for people. You know, people don't really seem to understand the these links.
Damaging.
It's seriously damaging. And I think if we want women to be able to succeed, we need to remove as a culture, and this is a huge deal, the tie-in between the way that women look and their worth, both from a male point of view, looking at women, and from a female point of view, because there's so much valuing of women based on how young we look or how slim we look or how attractive people find us. I mean, do you remember that conversation that... Lawrence Fox and was he with Dan Wooten when he was having that conversation about that reporter, and they were denigrating her and her opinion because they basically said they didn't want to sleep with her. I mean, that's the polite version of what they said, right? And men have to stop valuing women based on how fuckable.
But the problem with that, okay, so let's just break that down for a second, is that when you look at a guy and they say that, if you say to a guy, would you like status and money or good looks? Men will pick the status and money, because then actually you can kind of sort of, I imagine, buy what you want. But in terms of male hierarchy, status and power is higher than looks. But the problem with saying replace what it is that women look like is, what do we replace it with? Because when we replace it with our money and status, which I spend my life working with women who earn more than the men that they're with, who are very powerful and very rich and very all these things, now they are damned and looked down on, and they will clearly tell you that it is isolating to be a rich, successful woman. It's not something they're admired for.
Well, I think that as they become more and more, I think that the women will stick together. And does this tie into that fewer women are choosing to have male partners? Does it tie into the fact that more and more women are choosing to be single? More and more women are choosing not to have children. They're choosing not to perform these stereotyped roles of submissiveness and
look at Japan's
servitude.
Japan's birth rate is insane. It's like minus.
Exactly.
Italy's birth rate is almost minus.
And is that such a bad thing? Is that such a bad thing? And I think we also have to remove gendered ageism as well. It's a brilliant book. I don't know if you've read it or heard of it, called Hags by Victoria Smith, about the demonization of middle-aged women.
Yes,
right?
And I can vouch for this.
Massively.
No, but the only thing everybody wants to know is how old I am.
Yes.
And it makes me laugh, because I'm like, you know what? I don't age well for you. I age well for me. And actually, my aging, well or unwell, is none of your goddamn business. I'm just who I am, and I'm the age I am because it is what it is.
Yeah. A man's age is
irrelevant.
Synonymous with experience
and wisdom
and, you know, status. A woman that's aging, we're deemed to be, you know, old hags that are not worthy, and we're bitter and we're jealous. And when we try to talk to younger women, and I specifically remember this happening in the corporate world, some of the older women saw, you know, when I first joined the corporate world, and I've talked about this lots, it's not breaking news, that I saw the game that was in play. And I thought, I can play this game to win because I'm young and sexy and gorgeous, as well as super smart and bright and ambitious. Yeah. Right. So I played on that. And then the older women were like, I'm not sure you want to play that game. And then the guys, right, who have a lot invested in the younger girls playing that game, were like, they're just bitter and jealous. Don't listen to them. So they create these divisions between women.
Yes.
So that the older women's wisdom and protection and fire cannot get to the younger women, so that the younger women still play the game. But the problem is that you always become that older woman who's deemed bitter and, you know, all these sorts of things, just as she's really stepping into her power.
I was going to say, I think what I've done absolutely as I've aged is I've traded for power. And one of the interesting things I found, like on my social media and some, which I use a lot for work, is that my social media used to be 80% men. And it's now dropped to 18% men. And there is such joy in my heart at that drop, because I love the fact that I'm reaching the audience of women that I want to be speaking to, as opposed to someone who looks at how I look, which, thank you, but that's really not what I was doing there, right?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's a big thing. And women collectively as well have to be de-brainwashed. We need to reject this as well, because we, you know, all the magazines, everything, we're so brainwashed by every advert we ever see, every film, every this, every that, that tells us that youth and looks and how thin we look and all of this is what our worth is, that we need to collectively reject it as well. I mean, you think of the number of industries that would go out of business if women actually just were satisfied with how they looked and, you know, just didn't think that their entire worth was in that. But because that's the way that society treats us as we age, as our bodies change, when we become mothers, or, you know, the two big drop off points in the corporate world are motherhood and then menopause. You know, they're the two big drop off
points. There's a reason. There's an absolute reason for it.
Yeah,
it was so interesting. I was in India about 3 weeks ago, and I say that like that because I'm from Africa. I'm not really Indian from India, as it were. So I found it quite an interesting place to be. And I sat in front of a man who said, well, I an Indian man who was talking about the fact that he runs a huge social media agency and marketing agency. And he goes, yeah, we have menstrual leave built into our organization. And I was like, well, damn. And we were having this whole conversation. And let me assure you how this was not a traditional Indian conversation in any capacity, shape, or
form. Doesn't sound it.
No, your mother wouldn't even have this conversation with you. And here there is this random man going, yeah, no, we enforce menstrual leave. And I'm like, where did that come from? He goes, well, I have a client who talks about menstrual products. And he talked about me. Yes. Talks about menstrual leave and how it's necessary. So I implemented it in my business, because why wouldn't I? And I was like, damn.
Well, I think particularly for women as they come into perimenopause and menopause, when your cycle is unpredictable, and something that I have experienced personally at times has been catastrophically heavy bleeding, where the idea that I could travel an hour to an office without a disaster on the way and finding several bathrooms, the idea that I could sit through a 2-hour board meeting, it's complete, you know. And yeah. And at the same time that the women are experiencing, do you know something really interesting? A colleague of mine who's an absolute menopause expert, very senior nurse, she said that apparently around 25% of women have a relatively easy time through menopause. And isn't it interesting that the average number of women on boards is 25%? And that, you know, so women, because the amount you've had to stay through that really, you know, you've had to stay through the motherhood bit, you've had to stay through the menopause bit in order to get to that very senior level. And it's one of the ways that actually stops women from being really good allies to other women going through that, is that if you've had a relatively easy time, you might be more likely as a woman to look at women who are not having such an easy time and think, well, just pull yourself together.
Because I've talked a lot. I've got perimenopause, and I get people going, oh, well, it didn't work for no, I didn't have a problem. And you're like, yeah, and what do you mean? Surely you can't think there's not a problem just because it didn't touch you. And listening to what you're saying, 75% of them do have a problem, right? So we're going to go for a quick break, and then we're going to come back. And when we come, well, I mean, you can tell me what you want to talk about in the last segment of this, but.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
All right, we're back. And this is my sighing phase, my phase of, oh shit, really? I think that when we look at the West's concept of patriarchy is literally sort of almost an extension of colonialism. It's an extension of all these things that have extended over, because it was apartheid, slavery. You know, I've sort of never actually said this in my brain or connected it, but if you think about it, the entire white male patriarchal concept is based on we control everything by putting everyone else down.
It's dominance-based masculinity. That's what it is.
That's, no, that's the phrase.
Dominance-based masculinity, where... Yeah. And it's also the kind of thinking that comes from that is that and I love the pie analogy, actually, is that they don't want to give away what they see as part of the pie because they think there's only a limited amount of pie. Right. And what I love, there's actually a movement called Grow the Pie. Right. Yeah. And it's this zero sum game thinking that if someone else is winning or getting more of the pie, that you will get less of the pie. And this is where we see both in the world out there, this pushback against women's progress and against women's rights and against the smashing of gender stereotypes. You see this pushback, but we have to be able to rise beyond that. And actually one of the greatest ways that men can still progress in their careers is by being genuine and not performative allies or perhaps not even being allies at all. That is the future of male progress in the corporate world. And you can still be a white, middle-class, middle-aged man and still rise to the top and still progress if you are a genuine ally and you don't see it, you're losing. It requires real, and some of the conversations that I've had in corporates and helped facilitate this year has been around allowing men real space to voice their fears, because we have to listen to them. It's not pandering to them. I know.
No, I don't think it is. I think we have to have that conversation.
Because they're the ones that have the power to change, and the ones where, you know, women could have been shouting or whispering or begging from the sidelines for a very long time for things to change. But the minute that a critical mass of men call for the paradigm for masculinity to change and the way that women are treated and everyone who is not, you know, white and male to be treated differently, that's when things are genuinely going to change. Their voice, unfortunately, matters, has the greatest impact. And so getting them on board, genuinely on board, and working towards the change and being inclusive leaders and being true allies is actually the answer in the corporate world.
But also, if you're looking, and the interesting thing about that strand of conversation is that the reason people like Andrew Tate and Jordan Peterson are successful is because people are looking, men are looking for leadership in a fast changing world. If they were performing in a place where they were meant to perform and these were the steps, then they did that, like women did, right?
Yeah.
And then when you break out of it, like I remember when I did all the things I did and I was the first brown woman to do any of them, and the abuse and the attacks that I've gotten over my life for that have been relentless, global, and you know, they have been ruthless. And so, but being the one person that does it means a whole lot of people can come under you. And what these guys are doing, which we just have to accept, is they're providing a safe space for men to be. So if man says, I don't know how to be here and I feel bad about it, they're like, oh, no, no, it's okay. Just be like this. And so you really need people, men specifically.
We need alternatives.
Another space. But yeah, we need a safe space to be a decent, loving family man that knows that you don't want your daughter to be part of that pornographic film. And there is a distinct, like you look at the Harvey Weinsteins and all of these guys, they all have wives and daughters. But their wives and daughters are protected species that they don't see the rest of their life being like it is for the other women that they're abusing. They don't see their wives and their daughters like those people. And why don't they see them like that? Because for them, it's two separate things.
It's bizarre. It's this ability to dissociate, to detach, and also denial. I think there's a great amount of 100%. Denial. And you know, a lot, it's interesting because men will deny that, you know, we have so much, there's so much talking out there about, oh, women, be careful about this. Be careful after dark. Be careful with what you wear. Be careful, you know, constantly being told that there's danger out there from men, right? And let's be honest, we are being warned about all these dangers from men. Don't do this, don't do that. But then the minute that a woman says that something's happened to her, everyone's like, oh, maybe not. You know, men aren't like that. You know, it can't
not
be
all men.
No, it can't be like that. Here's the thing. We know that not all men are perpetrators, right?
But no one's having that conversation. We're not saying.
But we know that not all men are speaking up about this and playing their part. It's not enough. You get no badges for not being a perpetrator, right? That is the literal bare minimum. And this is
the achievement. How is it an achievement that you're not a violent, aggressive, misogynistic asshole? That is not an achievement. That should be a standard.
Where but you see that in the Not All Men Brigade. It's like people want badges for just not being complete assholes, and it's like you don't get prizes for that. This is where actual proactive, genuine, and not performative allyship is absolutely vital.
So what can women do, just in the last couple of minutes, what can women do in the workplace to improve their lives? You're about
what
to
be do?
Flexible. Gosh. Working from home.
They need to summon their courage. They need to speak up, and they need to find allies in other women and in the men around them who are willing to speak up with them. I think we have to stop being polite. We have to stop being too kind, right? The Be Kind movement has a lot of problems that I see in silencing women. Actually, oh, that's not kind to say that.
Oh, and being grateful and resilient. I hate being resilient. I don't want to bounce back. I'm not a trampoline. You know,
I really think, and I think that we shouldn't be afraid to call things out and raise things. And if things don't happen, kick up a massive fuss. Go straight to the top. Go to HR. You know, we've seen the way that a brand scandal affects companies. Companies need to take this more seriously.
It affects their bottom line hugely.
Yeah. I think before women join companies, they need to look at not just the policies, look at the gender pay gap data, look at the percentage of women that are progressing, ask for all of this information. When you're at an interview and they ask you, have you got any questions? Ask really difficult questions. Because you need to know what you're walking into. So many companies, you look on their website and you think, oh, you know, this looks fantastic. They've got all the policies. They've got this. They've got that. But you need to actually look at the reality.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think that the really joyful thing for us, you know, Harriet, is that this coming year will be a mass globalization of women's voices. And I think you and I are going to work very hard in creating that, and that's going to be a good thing. So thank you, babe. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for educating me.
It's been a pleasure.
And for helping me to connect those dots, because I think so much of this is about connecting the dots in our brain and seeing, you know, what it is that we kind of come out with. Because once you understand something, you can't go back from it.
Exactly. It's that thing. When you know better, you do better. And I think for a lot of men, we need them to know better so that then they can't say they didn't know.
No, exactly. Let's not hide it. Let's really showcase it. So if anybody wants to find Harriet, pop onto LinkedIn and go and find Harriet Whaley Cohen, and you'll see the insanely interesting and amazing stuff that she posts there. Thank you for joining me. Thank you so much. My name's Geeta Siddharob. This is Activate Yourself. And I would, you know, did you find this interesting? Is it something you're struggling with at work? Is it something that matters to you? Because if it does, tell me. And, you know, and I would love to talk more about the thing that you want to say. So we're going to do something unusual because I think Harriet wants to say something again very quickly before we leave. Did you want to say something?
I think that I was going to say that I have a t-shirt that says, if you're not angry, you're not paying attention. And I think we need to all really pay attention, feel the anger, and then use that as fertilizer to change things. We've got to allow ourselves to be angry, and we've got to change things.
So with those words, I think it's a really good time to end. Please join me again, and I will be speaking with you again soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Our goal was to give you pause, make you think about your life, and inspire you to say, wow, what if I tried to do that? If they can do it, so can I. Did it work? Let us know by finding us on social media at Geeta Sidhu Rob or at Nosh Detox. We upload new shows every 2 weeks here. And if you start to miss us, check us out on YouTube.